Sorry for the little bit of confusion. The talks weren't on the laptop, so we're just getting things set up. Okay, go ahead and we'd like to start the advanced technology track. We're going to start with a look into hard drive firmware hacking. Excuse me for that. The presenter is Kai Vaughn. He is from Gossamer Security Solutions. He's been working in this area since 2011 doing FIPS validations and is now also working Common Criteria. Take it away.
Thank you, Steve. Is this testing? Is it? Oh, yeah.
Slideshow.
Yep. Hello, everyone. So I just wanted to let you guys know that offhand that this really is an intro to hard drive firmware hacking. I'll dive into some of the nitty-gritty details, but I'll try not to shift the focus away from what I want out of this talk. It's really just for you guys to know what's going on in the world of hacking today. So the actual techniques used in hard drive firmware hacking really isn't new per se, but the group of attackers that are actively using this type of attack is fairly new, and I'll go through a little brief history of the attacking group. So first, we'll go into a little bit of background. This is considered malware, so I'll talk a little bit about malware, and I'm pretty sure you all know about malware. And then we'll jump into the techniques used in replacing the firmware, and we'll also talk a little bit about the risks and the hurdles that prove challenging to both the attackers and us as consumers. So, malicious software, malware. We've all run into it. If you use the PC, of course you've run into it. I remember my first run-in with malware was when I had my first Windows XP, and I was just, using as a newbie, and I wanted to unzip some files, but I didn't have a free alternative to WinZip, so I downloaded this really shady software, so when I installed it, my computer would just get bogged down. It would eat up my processes, and my internet would slow down too. And we've all had run-ins with this. And there are many, many different types of malware. They come in many forms, and they do many things, from annoying pop-up ads to something as dangerous as stealing our personal information. And that's what this type of hard drive firmware hack is attempting to do. It's attempting to access the data that's on our hard drives without us ever knowing about it through other means. So why do we even care about overwriting hard drive firmware? Why does this even matter? For one thing, if you're installing custom firmware, it comes with unwanted software as well that will run regardless of your intention or not to run it. With overriding this hard drive firmware, attackers can gain backdoor access to all of our data. And more importantly, they're able to do so in a way that will antivirus software won't be able to detect it, won't be able to wipe it off the system. And that's why firmware hacking is such a dangerous area. And another important part is that the hard drive encryption can also be bypassed. So back in February 2015, so February of this year, Kaspersky Labs, the manufacturer of the very popular antivirus software. They uncovered this these groups of hacks, these types of attacks on hard drive firmware and other types of software as well. Kaspersky named this group the equation group because of their affinity for strong encryption. Well, not strong encryption algorithms, just for their use of cryptography when they're creating these attacks. So when they're creating those attacks, they're usually encrypted with RC5, which is more popular around the equation group. But more recently, the equation group has been using RC6, RC4, and even more recently, AES encryption, just to hide their attacks. And Kaspersky verified that some of these attacks date all the way back, at least 14 years, back in 2001. So these, and they know this because there are certain code names to some of these attacks. And once Kaspersky found out back in, maybe they took a hard drive back in 2001, and they're looking through like a disassembled dump of the firmware, they're finding certain keywords that show up in these infected hard drives. The equation group has also affected a lot of countries. I've only listed five here: India, China, Russia, Egypt, Mexico, but it doesn't just stop there. There's the U.S. is also affected, Algeria, Syria, I believe. I regret not having the Kaspersky's chart up here, where they list three major categories. So there's a high rate of infection, a medium rate of infection, and a low rate of infection. Fortunately, we are on the low rate of infection. And Kaspersky also broke it down into the different types of systems that would get hacked. So there would be like medical, there could be energy, so we're talking maybe solar energy systems, more importantly nuclear, but we'll talk about that. And just military as well. So the equation group has a very far reach and a very wide hand. So you might be wondering which of these hard drives are being affected, and the answer really is all these major brands. We're talking Samsung, Western Digital, Seagate. And this is not to say that this is not an attack against the integrity of these manufacturers. They make great hard drives, but these attackers are able to somehow reverse engineer some of the proprietary information in these manufacturer hard drives, and we'll get into that as we go through this talk. One important thing to note is that of the physical drives that were demonstrated, they were mostly actual physical drives. Well, physical drives with those physical spinning plates, and hopefully I don't sound too old, but I mean, I am using, you know, SSDs every day, but I still rely on these spinning hard drives because they're cheap. They're mad cheap. But as we've seen in the past year, the cost per gigabyte for a solid state drive is dropping. So the shift seems to be more into the SSD direction. However, I believe the microcontroller and the actual circuit board of an SSD is still being researched, and we're still trying to find ways to break into the firmware. Again, Kaspersky's research went all the way back to 2001, when SSDs really weren't that prevalent, and these physical plates were more reliable and more widely used. So before I jump into the techniques, this really comes from my own experience, and just wanted to remind everyone that if you have physical access to a system, you're opening a whole world of breaking and entering possibilities. So What I have here is the very earliest example of when I was fiddling around with hardware. And this was a battery off of a PlayStation Portable 2000. And back then, I really wanted to install some custom firmware in there to run some applications that Sony didn't have. So what I did was I took this battery, and you'll see that gigantic chip in the middle is the RAM chip. And that's where the, so when you're playing a game and you want to save the state, all the state gets saved in there. But the most important piece is the chip right next to it, which is the flash, where the BIOS is stored, where the firmware is stored. So what I did is I took one of the pins on the flash chip, and I forgot which one. It might be the N one, and I hooked it up to a ground pin, and that would force an error in the chip, and the PlayStation would go into recovery mode, and that's when you can put in all sorts of stuff. So I put in a custom firmware just so that I have like a video player, you know, calculator that I could play like those old DOSBox games, because those retro games are amazing. yes. So along the same lines, let's take a look at this hard drive PCB. And this is just a general picture, but the layout is the same. You know, you have your motor control, you have your TVS dials to prevent against voltage surges. But most importantly, you have this cache chip on the left. You have your CPU main controller, and then you have your flash chip at the bottom there. So most of this research, I feel kind of bad for piggybacking off of it, but Jeroen Domburg is a software engineer, but he's kind of a hobbyist hacker sort of guy. And he actually has a demonstration, which I'll link at the end of this. I'll show the link at the end of this presentation. He actually goes through and demos how he was able to jump into a hard drive and then overwrite its firmware. But to spare you all the nitty-gritty details, I just wanted to give a quick rundown of his talk. And you'll see how this all ties in together. So there's a lot of moving parts. So if your PC is trying to access data off of your hard drive, it will send a request to the SATA interface, and the SATA interface will forward that request off to the first processor. The first processor will translate this data into sector cylinders heads in such a way that the disk logic is able to grab the data. It knows where to go to grab the exact data. And then theoretically, your disk logic would pass it back in the opposite direction. But that will slow down the processors. That's not really practical, and that's why you have this cache memory in there. The disk logic will take whatever data was requested, put it into the cache memory, and then push it, and then the SATA interface will be able to access it, bring it back to the PC. And that's why different hard drives have different cache sizes, depending on how big your data is or how fast you want your data back. Jeroen also asked the question, do those two processors, does the processor have access to the cache memory? It seems like the cache memory is only being accessed by the disk logic and the SATA interface. But what his demonstration showed is that yes, these processors have access to the cache memory. What does that mean? That means that these processors can modify data within the cache memory. It can modify it before it gets written to the disk or after, before it gets read or after it gets read by the PC. So this is an example of Jeroen's setup, courtesy of Jeroen Domburg of Sprites Mods. The red PCB there is a JTAG interface. And what he found is that on every, or on most of these hard drives, there are JTAG interfaces. So he took his interpreter and then he hooked up those wires to the rows of JTAG interfaces on the bottom of his, I believe this is a Western Digital green drive. So what does that mean? I mean, you know, you have this JTAG hooked up. What can you do with it? Yaron was able to use an on-chip debugger. In his case, he used OpenOCD, which is open source software, to read data coming back from the JTAG interface. And what he found is that, yes, the processors have read-write access to the cache memory, but he was also able to manipulate data coming in through the cache memory. So he wrote a special hook in the code that would operate, that would run when the disk logic was being accessed, and he was able to write like a string of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 onto the drive without even using the JTAG interface and just using these processors. And Yaron also found out that the flash can be dumped and disassembled, as a matter of fact, which means that malicious programs can lie embedded in the firmware image, because if he's able to run a program in memory, because if you remember the circuit board layout, you do have your cache chip, you do have your CPU, and what does this look like? This looks like a PC. So most people don't realize it, but their hard drive circuit boards act like a PC. So going back, you can run a program in cache memory and have it do what you want it to do. But if you have it running in cache memory, it's not going to survive a power cycle. Once you unplug it, the data will get wiped. So what should an attacker do? They embed their malicious software into firmware so that when it gets written back to flash, it remains persistent. Up until now, I mean, I mostly talked about how to physically hack into this hard drive, but can it be done without using a JTAG? Can it be done remotely? And the answer to that question is yes. If you guys have ever poked around with your BIOS settings and stuff, then you'll know that you're able to update your firmware through a very vendor specific program. And I first found that out when I built my first PC, and it was making very strange clicking noises, and I would see the voltage on the CPU, on the actual motherboard. There were four LEDs based on the voltage level. I would see it spike a lot, and I looked up online why this was, and the reason for that is that the firmware actually has some like power saving code in it that that throttles the amount of voltage going to the CPU. So with the firmware update, I was able to control that and just say, you know, I'll just turn it on, let it go full blast, whatever, because that annoying clicking sound was definitely a lot worse than having high power. So these firmware updates that you get from these manufacturers, they're very vendor specific. They use something called vendor specific commands in order to overwrite or write or rewrite bits of the firmware on the hard drive. Now keep in mind that you have many different manufacturers, many different hard drive models. And each one is going to have their own very own specific commands, and the way that they operate based on, you know, cache size, or maybe the headers and the cylinders are from a different manufacturer. They're all going to operate differently. So, is it possible for an attacker to dump the firmware flash, and then sort of reverse engineer all of these VSCs? And I think the answer to that question is, given enough time and resources, we can do anything, right? So So yeah, I believe that these attackers are able to reverse engineer all of these VSCs and then sort of create their own firmware update, which they can remotely push out to these machines and cause it to run automatically or unbeknownst to the operator. Malware Tech Blog is also another blog that goes through a step-by-step demonstration of hacking the hard drive's firmware. And they basically said that an attacker has two methods of doing this. The first is they can create what's called a serial peripheral interface, which is probably just a little device that has your firmware on it. An attacker is able to go and pluck out a hard drive, attach some wires, possibly to the JTAG interface, and automatically update, reflash the firmware of the hard drive. And the second is the one that we discussed, which is the sending firmware updates to the user, to the operating system. Of course, using an SPI programmer requires physical access, and I think I'd be pretty wary of an attacker walking in carrying around this little thing with wires sticking out of it. And what's even more is that the attacker would have to go to each individual. Let's say there's 100 hard drives he wants to hack. The attacker would have to go to each and every single one, pull it out, you know, unscrew some screws, pull it out, reflash each and every one of them, and then put them all back in. That takes a lot of time. So the method that makes most sense is the firmware update method, which you can send out to numerous hard drives, and it can also be done remotely. However, think about what the firmware update entails. The VSCs need to be reverse engineered. That takes a lot of time and effort. And also, on top of that, each hard drive model is different. So if it doesn't mean that if you figure out the VSCs for a Western Digital Green, that it's going to work on a Western Digital Green V2. So what are the risks here that we're facing? This malware is undetectable by any traditional antivirus software that we have right now. This hack is also persistent. It lives in the flash. It survives wiping. And there was an example earlier, which I didn't mention, which was Kaspersky found that the equation group was using an attack to basically create a virtual file system in which the hard drive wouldn't be able to access. It wasn't able to detect it. So it could hide any data that comes across that cache memory into that hidden virtual file system. However, going back to the facts, this isn't really a big threat. I mean, the attacker has to go through all this trouble of reverse engineering the VSCs, and that takes a lot of time, you know, a lot of resources. It's like finding a needle in a pile of needles, or getting a cake and then being asked to find the origin of every single ingredient in that cake. And when you dump the VSCs, or when you dump the firmware flash, the VSCs aren't really apparent. Sometimes when you're disassembling an executable, you're able to tell, oh yeah, this function, it says this function puts variable A into variable B. But VSCs are very vendor proprietary. These are not publicly documented. Only the vendor has these. So it's like, again, looking through a dump of the flash and just leading around blindly. It's like going through a maze with a blindfold on. Kaspersky also noted that these specific hard drives were targeted. The hard drives that we have in our system may or may not have it, may or may not have this hack within it. But the hard drives that were targeted are very specific, and Kaspersky hinted towards these hard drives that exist in disjoint systems. So let's say you have a nuclear system that you don't want the data to be on the internet, obviously. You would create some sort of air gap network that's only able to be accessed by alternate means. And these are the more high risk hard drives that would get targeted by these attackers. So here are a bunch of references for you all. The first is Jeroen Domburg's presentation. He goes into the very nitty-gritty details of hard drive hacking. He demos this. And the second is MalwareTech's firmware hacking. And you have information on the equation group as well. Questions, comments? Yes, John. Yes. unfortunately, when firmware checks its own integrity, it relies on itself. In this case, so I believe that's how the PSP was able to get hacked so easily. It's because if it relies on its own firmware to check itself, then
oh,
you.
So FIPS power on self test would not.
That's why we need secure boot. Yes.
Is there a legitimate use for executable hash harness hash on a hardware controller?
Is so you're asking if there's a specific use case or So, based on the research that I conducted, it seemed as if they used the cache to sort of ferry off data that was being accessed to other parts of the hard drive. So that is a very specific use case, and I believe does that answer your question? Okay. Yes, Steve. Yes, they're not apparent to the actual hard drive controller. The controller doesn't recognize that file system, but the program does because it has very low-level access to all the partitions.
So it's a little extra bit of code you dump into the flash and use like different drive commands.
Yes. Yep. Right. More recently, there was I think there was an article about using the unused blocks of an SSD because an SSD has a lot of reserve blocks because when one block fails, it kind of just goes and grabs another. But there was an article about hiding data within these blocks that might or might never get used. So, yes.
Would a flash in your hard disk from a known good firmware source clear itself the problem?
So yes. The research shows that even though you might reflash your firmware, there might be, if the attacker is good, there might be some other code that will reintroduce this these bits of codes that the attacker has written into the flash, and it'll basically repwn your device, take it over again. Yes, Ashit.
Do hard drive vendors now have an ability to push firmware updates?
Yes. Yeah, they do. I don't have a specific example, but I feel if your firmware is underperforming, let's say you came out with a hard drive, and your firmware is controlling all of the data and stuff, but your write speeds are like very, very low, and then you found a bug in your firmware, then yeah, a manufacturer could come back and say, hey, update your firmware, let's replace a couple bits in your code, in your firmware image, and everything should be good to go.
Is it seamless that you can do it through the operating system, or do you have to do it, is it more disruptive?
So yes, you do it through the operating system, and this comes back to my experience. I ran an executable that would load some code into RAM, and then it would say, okay, now I need to reboot, because if I'm modifying by the motherboard BIOS, then things are going to go crashing down if I don't reboot. The firmware updates could be run through the operating system. Yes. Right, and that's where the equation group comes in. They have so many different types of attacks that this is just one small part of it. They'll have attacks that will be able to exfiltrate that data through the web. Yes. Right.
Sure, some groups will have all of this information at hand.
Right. And again, I highly encourage you to go check out Jeroen Domberg's presentation. But his demo basically did this exact thing, where he found on the web somewhere some Samsung firmware that they were able to just push onto the Samsung device. Actually, that might have been the Malware Tech blog. Demonstration, but yep, you're exactly correct. Yes, I believe, however, because these vendor-specific commands operate they operate down to the very low level of the hard drive. To reverse engineer that takes a lot of time, and I'm wondering if it changes across different manufacturers. Well, of course, it changes across different manufacturers, but what about different models or hardware revisions? Maybe revision A uses some type of cylinder, but revision B uses a different type, and the VSC would need to change or to be updated in order to accommodate that change. Yes.
There's
You're right.
Yes, it's not documented, but it is externally, but it is documented internally.
Yep, yes, yes.
So that can get out. So if you don't put some other protection in your drive to authenticate before BSD is executed.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, and I refrain from actually blaming the entity that's backing up the equation group, but you're absolutely right. There could be some way to exfiltrate this the very vendor specific data from these manufacturers, and you would skip a whole like 6 months of reverse engineering. You're absolutely right. Yes. That's absolutely right.
Some of the devices have jumpers to disable updates. Motherboards used to have it as a common thing that they usually would ship disabled, and you'd have to enable that. That's become less and less common, but a lot of them still have pins. Hard drives used to do that as well, but I think it's become less and less common. They just assume it would be updated. So you can check.
And this was a Huawei device?
Yeah, and to their credit, I guess Huawei was very good when it was pointed out to them that, hey, you should really check if you have signed firmware updates. They fixed it, but that was pretty scary because you turn on the power of the laptop and you can see, an Amazon cloud service connection established to the modem.
Wow. Good thing I picked up a Nexus 5X then, not a 6P. But the 6P, I would have gone for a 6P. Because of the processor speed and whatever, but I digress.
So shouldn't we rely on this to come up with a firmware update validation program?
If you do it through NIST, then I don't know if they can take on the load right now. Too much on their hands.
Anything else?
Good. All right. Thank you so much, guys. It's been wonderful.